Well, here's the thing. You have to get the dose. The dose is very critical. If you take, say, I would say a half a gram to a gram every day, my experience of that was simply a kind of anxiety, a kind of being set forward, a speed type effect. If you say, well, then I don't want that, so I'm going to lift the dose slightly, and you go to, say, 2.5 grams, the problem I had with that is life quickly evolves into being so strange that I couldn't handle it. In other words, it's very important for me to dip into these places and then to get out, towel off, and think about it. However, there is a streak of the chicken shit in me, I think. If you really want to leave us all behind, and bourgeois values and your job and Bill Clinton and the ozone hole and all of that behind, then if you start taking psilocybin, let's say 4 grams every 3 days, I guarantee you within a month there will be very few people that you will have much in common with, and you will be very happy. You will be very happy.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Alan, it's a possibility, isn't it?
The very word secrecy is repugnant.
Secrets.
In a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers,
constant extreme danger,
which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger,
extreme danger,
that an announced need for increased security.
What the hell is going on?
This is Conspiracy Queries with Alan Carr.
Will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control.
You're crazy!
And no officious, high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes.
Isn't the Pentagon suspicious that all the buildings would blow up?
Or to withhold from the press and the public?
I think you're just looking at things for the first time.
The facts they deserve to know.
You've had your whole fucking life to think things over. What good's a few minutes more gonna do you now?
The facts they deserve to know. They deserve to know. Deserve to know. Deserve to know. facts yeah. that you have to know.
Go ahead. Right.
Doing it.
Doing it right now. Thanks a lot for the reminder. Appreciate that. Some sort of elevated existence. It doesn't mean I'm better than anybody. It just means I'm better than I was before. Better than me. Yeah, that's the... probably the longest theme song to a podcast at all. People skip it past it all the time, I guess. I do. But I don't, because I like listening to it. There it is. There's the Raven. All right, let's get started. Welcome to the show. We're doing another one, looks like. Who would have figured? Welcome to this week's. Yeah, that's what I was waiting for. I knew that little bugger was in there somewhere. I'm raising the fist. I'm getting to it. Hang on. Oh, here come the horses. All right. Yeah. It's going to be a fascinating show today because it's about the law. We do have a lawyer. Oh, there's the calls lighting up now. Get him off. We don't like lawyers. You'll like this guy. Trust me. He's our guest today. So let's talk about who he is on Green Crush Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. We are at episode 122 of Conspiracy Queries. And Green Crush 50. Where will we be later? We don't know. Things are changing. Exciting things are happening in the world, good and bad. But they're definitely exciting. I don't mean that in a good way. I just mean they excite. You get all worked up about it. I do. Lots of shit going on right now. And new laws are coming into the cannabis scene. And of course, Green Crush is about the laws as well as it is the actual substance. Because your green substance is crushing the laws that are preventing us getting access to this plant. I've always said that. That's the name of the show. And as we keep finding people in the loop, here's our guest today. You're not going to believe this guy. He has a book called The Margolin Guide, The State of California and United States Federal Marijuana Laws. Know the laws and your rights. So listen up, because you probably live in one of these states if you're listening to this show. You also might be in a province in Canada, and you should also listen up. The laws are going to be remarkably similar. Anybody that can understand this mother tongue I'm trying to get through, it's going to benefit you. Even if you live in a different country, you can still take this information and help yourself formulate a similar platform from your nationality. You know what I mean? But basically, it's the same thing. The law almost everywhere, very, very similar. Enough so that a Canadian can discuss things with an American. So please welcome to the show when we get to him, Bruce M. Margolin, attorney at law. He's got an app called 420 Laws. It's an app. Tells you what's up. The sound of ice. He is the he has been the Criminal Defense Attorney of the Year. He's been named a Criminal Defense Super Lawyer, which I hope doesn't mean you wind up after dealing with him in a supermax prison. But I'm sure he's not that at all. He's trying to keep people out of there for like 50 years now. Bruce Margolin has represented clients in all kinds of criminal matters, but now primarily to do with cannabis. This is amazing. And since 1973, has been the director of Los Angeles National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML, N-O-R-M-L, and was also an advisor for Proposition 215. And if you don't live in California, you don't know that means Californians for... I slurred that. Did you hear that? Californians for Compassionate Use, and has also served as legal counsel for the California Hemp Initiative, a very dapper and suave-looking gentleman. Paul knows him. You know Paul on the show. If you listen to the show regularly, you know Paul he's experienced some turns and twists with the law. And Bruce helped him. So he's in Hollywood. He's in West Hollywood. We'll get to all that later. But if you're just listening now, jump on. He charges $4.20 for this publication, by the way, which is pretty cool. And there's this app. So let's get that again. $4.20. So 420 Laws, L-A-W-S. Check it out. And I haven't downloaded the thing myself, but we will be getting to Bruce soon. I'm so glad he's on the show. I'm Canadian, as you may know. Alan Park of Green Crush, living in this country. So this is why I've been talking about Canadian laws coming down the pike for a long time. And so much of the bad stuff has happened that I was able to glean earlier on, predict, you know. You could see patterns going. What I didn't see was that when I told that reprehensible bringer of garbage, Kathleen Wynne, that I was shouting her down and taking her to task for her nonsensical distribution system of cannabis. Nothing but a series of impediments and problems and hassles. It's going to cost money. It was ridiculous. Wanted to put brick and mortar stores everywhere, but was only going to put 40 across an area the size of Texas or whatever compared to Hamilton, which has already got 100 right now. Small town within that giant province. Not smart. Like, not thinking, not being open to reality. Like, you could say, let's put 40 stores out next year and then 40 more later, and we'll just keep doing that. You're not thinking. It doesn't work like that. People aren't going to drive across the province to go to the designated. Anyway, she's gone, lost in the election. A lot of people upset about it, including members of her own party, because she pretty much spanked her ass on the way out of the door with, what was it, two seats left or whatever it was, eight seats? Not enough. Not enough anyway. And I feel good about it. Not the part that we have another guy in where we have to contend with a different colored tie, but I really brought it to her. Personally. Put my friggin' heart on the line. Told her the truth. Told her that she was lying about a lot of the aspects of cannabis that they have used fiction to be able to wrap it up in a series of bullshit architecture, and then they're going to stuff it down our throats. And those not informed and pay attention on the outsides, and that's not a criticism, so not everybody uses cannabis, and I'm not saying everybody should, although they should. But people saying, like, oh, it's going to be legal soon. You must be thrilled, huh? No. I'm not thrilled. They're doing it wrong. I'm not a fan of that. However, we do have this new blue-tied fella, and he's made a lot of things that have, a lot of, let's call them mistakes, a lot of different mistakes, a lot of impositions, some lies already. They said they weren't going to get rid of, this pilot project for low earner income or whatever it was. I wasn't even familiar with it, but they got rid of it, and they promised that they wouldn't while they were campaigning. So, you know. We're back to the same thing. This guy, Doug Ford, has not put together a cogent plan up to date until yesterday. And it's still not fully fleshed out, and I don't understand it. And a lot of people who have a lot more time invested into it than I do aren't really, you know, 100% comfortable with everything. But basically, here's where we're at. They're not going to be these ridiculous, stupid, poorly thought out, despite all of the warning signs, Kathleen Wynne's team of clowns are now gone. So I know the other guys you're not happy with, but be happy the clowns are gone. We got new clowns, I guess, but this whole rights oppression thing, now this Doug Ford is putting in a different option. We're not going to reopening these stores that Kathleen Wynne paid $650,000 to buy a fucking logo for something that's not even going to exist. First of all, it sucked at the time, and that's probably why I don't get any kind of voiceover work from the Leo Burnett Company, because I call them out on it. It's a fucking circle with three letters in it. $650,000, well done. I wish I could make a couple of circly designs and make over $500,000. Must be nice. However, that's not going to happen now because it was a stupid friggin' plan. She went ahead with it. I don't really blame Burnett as much as I do the government. You know, they were just providing a logo. They're like, here's a circle and three letters. Give us $500,000, you idiot. And she said, okay, this is a woman running the money of the entire province, supposedly. $650,000 for a logo we can't use. And it sucked. I mean, it really was a horrible-looking logo. Even the guys that made the Vancouver Canucks sweater, the V thing, were going, oh my God, that's horrible. But before we get to things local, and there's been a lot of stuff going on in this country, Canada, boy, oh boy, we always like to think we're, you know, right up there with the States, and we never are, because we don't go to all those countries that they invade, but, you know, we do attend some of them, and now we're in a dust-up with this Saudi Arabia clan. And they're all upset with us because, now I'm not saying, that the minister involved, Chrystia Freeland, should have or should not have tweeted what she tweeted. But all she tweeted was the fact that Saudi Arabia is a bit pushy with some human rights and they should smarten up. They have now freaked out about this, pointing out their shortcomings. I've been a fan of this for a long time, by the way. A fan of showing the bad side of Saudi Arabia, because how can you conscionably live in a country that on the one hand attacks ISIS, and rightly so, because they cut off heads, but then when the Saudis actually, literally, look it up, cut off more heads than ISIS, but they're your friends and you're selling them weapons and you're giving a shit what they say, then I'm not okay with that. And so I didn't really like the fact that General Dynamics, the company General Dynamics that supplies military vehicles, had a contract drummed up by Tory Stephen Harper, conservative rather, Stephen Harper. Horrible deal at the time. But what about the jobs? You're getting people in London, Ontario to profit from the fact that dead people are exploding inside of Yemeni hospitals? Like, what? That's your plan? That's your plan. Okay, great. So then Trudeau comes along and says, you know, everything about Harper sucks and vote for me, and everybody falls for it and they do it. And of course, he continues the same plan with General Dynamics selling all of these military equipments to these gingham champions. I call what they wear gingham just out of lack of respect for their headgear, considering. I mean, I get a lot of lack of respect for my headgear, so I can take a punch. But what the hell's going on up there? Wear what you want, but if you're going to be a rights-abusing bastard while you're at it, you're open game to be made fun of. They're selling off their Canadian securities in response to Ottawa's criticism of the arrest of a female activist. Riyadh, that's in, I guess that's where they do their Operation Saudi Central news bullshit from. They say they're ready to take the step despite financial losses. They want to stop everything. They're pulling students out of schools. Are we going to get our wheat board back? Is Saskatchewan going to get the wheat board? We sold these idiots the wheat board. We sold it because they have a grain company and because they've been so nice to us with the oil over the decades. Thought it'd be a good idea to put some Canadian grain in their fucking hands. So, you know, they're really a pain in the ass. Then we got this guy, John Baer, jumping up and telling us what a disaster we are for giving them a hard time. Oh, God. So now let's move up out of the politics and back into cannabis-themed things, because that's what this is, really. Here in Canada, the marijuana police squad is put on hold despite the looming deadline. This is in Ontario, speaking of London, with just two more months before recreational marijuana becomes legal. Staffing of a special squad that Ontario has planned to snuff out black market pot has suddenly been put on hold. Let me just say that again. So this old pot plan they were trying to get together, and all the cops want to do it, of course. Once again, they were the first consultees when they were going to flip this pie over, stupidly and wrongly so. But now they're pissed off that they can't put boots to the ground of their special squad snuffing out black market pot. I mean, can you see the Brooklyn Nine-Nine on this thing? Bunch of fucking idiots. Hey, are you just relieving your pain right there with that thing that grew in the ground? How about some jail time for you? Sick and tired of this mindset. So what are we going to do with this special squad of snuffing out black market pot? How you snuff out black market pot would be to make it all legal. You stupid idiots. You just stop criminalizing it. Okay, don't tell us, oh, we have to get more cops and you smokers of pot are going to cost us more money at the municipal level and it's going to be hard to, you know, we're going to have to pay. No, you don't. You're just making that choice because you're a bitch. But under the former Liberal government, now flushed where it belongs, the province in March announced the creation of a provincial operation. This is the black market quashing boots on the ground. The Canadian, the Cannabis Intelligence Coordination Center, the CICC. I mean, do we need another alphabet agency that's going to abscond with gigantic budgets and have nothing to show for it just to be able to fuck with people's rights? To shut down illegal pot shops and combat the black market supply of marijuana after the drug becomes legal. And if it were decriminalized, there wouldn't be a need to hire all these cops. See, this is what all the thinking and the planning was, right? This is what they were doing in the first place. When they finally realized, okay, we're going to have to make cannabis legal in this country. People look to us. We're going to have to set it up. And they went so cop heavy, boots on the ground heavy, Cannabis Intelligence Coordination Center. You'd have to get an entire farmer's field of fucks for me to care about that. What a bunch of self-appointed assholes. Legal weed was originally expected as early as July 1, but the federal law allowing allowing just the premise. This is mainstream press. This is why some people call it fake, and they're right to do so. Allowing recreational... Is it okay? Teacher, can I get a hall pass so I can go to the bathroom? Ontario's released no other information about its secretive task force, which is to be funded by the province and made up of officers drawn from police forces across the... These guys don't need a whole bunch of extra employment because all of a sudden other folks are enjoying their rights. This whole premise sucks. I'm sick of this shit. It's getting worse while they're giving the illusion it's getting better. Every single word matters in these stories of bullshit. Now, hiring police officers for the CICC has been put on hold. Fucking good, said Sarnia Mayor Mike Bradley, who doubles as a member of his city's police services board. I mean, God, this is sometimes why I don't read the whole thing ahead of time, eh, Russell? I mean, it says right here, this is like, here's a lesson in conflict of interest. So this guy is a cop. He's on the police services board helping out the cops while he's being the mayor, making sure we can get a CICC so folks like me and you can't use something that's been put here that we can use for our health. This whole thing is skewed. This tool Bradley, the mayor cop, says, I don't understand how they can't move forward on it, especially a government that's so committed to law and order. The deadline for legalization is so close. I don't want to take the time to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. I have to see a picture of this guy because I'm getting an image like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man or something. Sarnia Mayor Mike Bradley, the cop mayor. Yeah, good for you. Let's see this dude. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Oh, yeah. Okay, I see it. Right. He doesn't look like how I thought he was going to look, but... Definitely shades of weasel going on there. Sarnia Mayor Mike Bradley. You don't understand how they're not moving forward on it because I don't know why Doug Ford has taken the tack of using what they're going to do here, the new premier. They're going to usher in a system of buying it online. I guess Kathleen Wynne's 40 stores of brick and mortar won't be built. But they're going to buy it online immediately, not immediately, but when it becomes available on October 17th, and then I think it's April 1st next year, it's going to open up things a little more. They're going to have shops here and there, but it's not. And I've got really good news for you, folks. You don't have to wait till October 17th to buy it online. I buy it online all the time. It's already happening. It's been happening forever. This is all cartoons here. Just choosing to, I better observe the regulation. No, you better point out that the regulation is a rights imposition. Sarnia police plan to hire one officer on a 2-year contract to work on the task force. So, in other words, this mayor's got a buddy who he wanted to give a job for 2 years on the public tit. Now he's all disappointed it's not coming together. When the police board met last month to approve the hiring, the city's deputy chief told Bradley the process had been paused, the mayor said, adding the board gave the green light in anticipation of the hold being lifted. I cannot see them not proceeding with this, said the whiny bastard. The sooner the better, the nine-term mayor said of the new Doug Ford government. I know they put a pause on everything, but you would think this would be a priority to move forward. Shut up, Sarnia Mayor Cop. You're wrong, especially when here we are in, it says here that the future of the CICC is also at peril, which is good. You can't even believe the spreadsheet on this, but I'm kind of running out of time. Got to get to our guest pretty soon. But here's another problem we do have to address, and I will be addressing it with our guest, Bruce Margolin, who will be on the line shortly. Listen to this thing. This is the CTV report of all things cannabis, I suppose. I can't get it right to the beginning. Oh, well, let's see. Lisa LaFlamme of CTV News. Here we go. Are you there, Lisa? Are you coming in?
Anna, an unsettling number of Canadians now admit to driving high. One out of seven people surveyed by Statistics Canada say they got behind the wheel within 2 hours of using cannabis. Men were nearly twice as likely as women. Ottawa has given the green light to one road test. There are some red flags, though. Here's senior political correspondent Glenn McGregor.
This device will become the first approved in Canada to test drivers for marijuana impairment. But CTV News has found concerns about the Draeger Drug Test 5000 over both its speed and accuracy.
It's inevitable that we're going to see constitutional challenges as soon as this device hits the road.
Police.
Fucking right. Constitutional challenges as soon as this device hits the road because it doesn't work and it tells lies. Okay, cops? You guys had all the extra time at the beginning of this legalization. Too late. You're out. I'm calling it. The first device set to be approved by the federal government for roadside saliva tests to determine marijuana impairment isn't suited for cold weather. Have you checked Canada's weather? I mean, these guys are in Canada, right? Says here, if it's cold out, it's found to give fairly large proportions of false positive or false negative results. And let's also remind ourselves that if we are showing positive for cannabis, it's not even an affirmation that you are impaired. The Draeger Drug Test 5000 has been, our justice minister has published a notice of intention to approve it and listed as approved drug screening equipment. Because she knows nothing. For law enforcement to use at the roadside to test for both THC and cocaine. However, CTV News has found concerns about the efficacy. And this is a mainstream news organization. I've been saying about the inefficacy of these people and their fucking machines for a long time. Sorry I'm swearing a lot today. I've been repressed, sort of pushed together in a little cube. A lot of things happening lately. Lost a few people. I'm a bit on edge, I'll admit it. Doesn't change the accuracy of the reportage. It's inevitable that we're going to see constitutional challenges as soon as this device hits the roads. This is something that is a significant departure from what the Supreme Court has authorized and what police have been doing so far. Etc., etc., etc. What are we going to do about that? Well, before we go to our friend, we're about to do this. Let me get Bruce's number up here on the ding banger. And boop, 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 boom. Okay. Let's see. Oh, my goodness. Kimmy, Kim, Kim. There it is. Okay, fantastic. Copy. Yeah, this is getting nuts. I mean, these cops, I've been saying this for a long time, that they've been nervous because they've known the whole time that they are uncertain about where their bold step into a new frontier of taking our rights away is going to leave them. And understandable. Because I'm not going to take this shit. I certainly am not going to take this. I can't wait to get into court if I am so arrested by this. Now I can't seem to get that number on there, damn. All right. So, let's, before we, I was going to call him in a second. Hang on. Kyla Lee. is a Vancouver criminal lawyer. So this is Canada now, and we'll see what she has to say about this, and then we're going to spend some time with Bruce. She says the government-approved saliva drug tester is fatally flawed. KylaLee.ca. KYLALEE.ca. She says the Canadian government announced that it's finally chosen the Draeger Drug Test 5000. The device is subject to numerous flaws. I discussed some of the pitfalls generally with saliva testing, and none of those pitfalls are cured by the Draeger Drug Test 5000. Now that we know what the device is that's coming, we can identify which specific pitfalls apply to this device. So here's what we have to look out for. Major concerns with the individual's charter rights at the roadside when using a saliva tester. The Draeger Drug Test 5000 is a much different than a roadside breathalyzer, and that is one of the reasons why the constitutional rights are very much on the line here. The Supreme Court of Canada has confirmed that roadside drug testing and alcohol testing is already a violation of the charter right to counsel and right to be secure against unreasonable search and seizure. However, the violation is justified on the basis of the fact that the tests are predicated on a reasonable suspicion and conducted forthwith. This means immediately. However, the roadside saliva testing chosen by the government will not be done immediately. The device, the Draeger 5000, requires that a swab be rubbed in the mouth for 2 to 3 minutes between the gum and the cheek in order to capture enough saliva for a suitable sample. After that, the analysis process also takes time, although the government claims it's only a few minutes. Oh, it's only a few minutes multiplied by everybody, and it doesn't work. The Draeger Drug Test 5000 literature explains that this can be 5 to 10 minutes in total. Imagine that when they're pulling them all over at the, you know how it is with the ride checks. There's like 50 cars sitting there. You're going to be there for hours, buddy. These idiots don't even know this shit doesn't work. So a person could be detained and, oh, back to the blog. So a person could be detained and subject to this search for close to 15 minutes. All the while, there's no right to call a lawyer. Worse still, the search is far more invasive than a breath test. Your body naturally expels air, and the courts have considered that since breathing is natural and the breathalyzer is just capturing that breath, the privacy concerns are mitigated. But a few minutes worth of saliva buildup in the recesses of your mouth is a whole other story. We're talking about a bodily fluid that can reveal a great deal about a person and something that is not normally expelled. In fact, it's an offense to expel it otherwise in public. And then there are the concerns about functionality. Not only does it require a minimum volume of saliva, which some people may not be able to produce, especially if you got dry mouth, eh, dude? But it also requires it to be collected and analyzed in a certain temperature range, 5 to 40 degrees. So that's 5 degrees above freezing for you Americans. That's that'd be like 38 degrees Celsius. So from 38 degrees Celsius to like 110 or 120 degrees, anything outside of that doesn't work. So it's also not going to work in hot, you know, Arizona or when California's on fire. It's not going to work here most of the time. Amazing. Yeah, I don't know. Didn't want to get into too much of a geography lesson, but, you know, for most of the year, we're outside that temperature range. If Canadians cannot get reliable results most of the year, then the device should not be used. It's useless for the stated goal of public safety, and it's useless for protecting charter rights. The Draeger Drug Test 5000 poses significant operational concerns for police. If police allow the subject to hold the swab themselves and collect the saliva themselves, there are concerns about letting an untrained person do it and not collecting a suitable sample. Alternatively, if the police do it, can you imagine with what these guys do, them taking like a Q-tip and jamming it into your gums? I don't know if you've seen a lot of their activities online lately, but this isn't the gang of folks I need access to be shoving things into my face. If police allow the subject to hold themselves and collect themselves, if they do it, they compromise their safety. The officer will have to be in close physical proximity with the driver for several minutes with one hand occupied. Oh, God. And while most people will probably be cooperative, yeah, they probably will. That will pose a safety risk for officers who are unable to defend themselves. After all, they're testing people whom they suspect are under the influence of drugs. If that person turns violent, it could pose a serious physical risk to one-armed police officers. And then there's the issue of the operation of the device itself and how the cops are going to be recording the steps they took in collecting the sample, giving the instructions, and operating the device. It's hard enough, in my experience, says this lawyer, Kyla Lee, for the police to articulate how they operated a breathalyzer, which they've had decades of practice with, and that device only has two buttons. Oh, God. Remember when they lowered the IQ for cops in 2000? The steps to do this in both a safe and sanitary way, while following the manufacturer's direction, are going to be stumbling blocks for the police in court. And that all comes out as tax dollars, huh? What concerns me the most is the major pilot project undertaken by the federal government for the testing of these devices did not look at the ultimate device chosen. The Dräger Drug Test 5000 was not thoroughly studied across Canada. This fits with what's becoming a disturbing trend about Bill C-46 and its implementation. Regulate it first and worry about the science later. Exactly. There are very real concerns this saliva testing device is going to violate Canadians' constitutional rights, risk putting police in danger, and be operated in circumstances that can contribute to unreliable results. Kind of like voting. More is needed before it is approved. That's why they're shitting their pants. Okay. I don't know what's going on. I go like this. I go, copy this thing. Copy. Here we go. I don't know why that wasn't working before. Let's hope it is now. My goodness. Oh, God. I'm just having trouble with my Skype thing. Again. Hang on. Oh, God. This is what they're doing in Canada. This is, I thought we were going to wrap all this up a long time ago. Here we go. Let's see if we got a... I don't know if I can hear this. Ringy. It's ringing, apparently. How come I'm not hearing anything, Russell? Anybody know anything? Because we haven't chatted on Skype yet. What are you talking about? We did that yesterday. Okay. Well, that's neat. fantastic. This is what I got to do here. This guy here. Call. Okay. That's good. That's Russell for you. Let's get Bruce on the line here.
Bruce Marbolin, good afternoon.
Oh, hello. Is Bruce there, please? We are doing the radio show.
Oh, okay. You were supposed to call his cell phone.
Ah, well, thank you. I will take that up with...
310?
Oh, don't say it.
310?
Don't say it. No. We're on the air.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. No. That's okay. Our problem. Okay, we'll be right back with our live show in a minute. I'll call him back on the cell line. Thanks. Okay, so now he is at a number that I don't have. Cool. All right, well, that's neat. Hopefully somebody also working on the show will realize this, and we can get him on the line. I need his number, though. We're kind of going late. Well, he's 10 minutes late now. It's been a long one. But I wonder if I can... Kim's getting things together with the correct number this time, so I would like to take this opportunity to do a little bit of a commercial. All right? Can we do that? Oh, that wasn't... There we go. Fantastic. Well, guess what? We've been talking a lot on the show about hemp, some other cool developments going on growing hemp, not necessarily cannabis, but hemp in the States. But I've been contacted by some folks down in Missouri, and they are excited to announce that the new approach Missouri medical cannabis language has been officially certified for the November 6th ballot by the Secretary of State's office. they will be a yes on the amendment. So that's pretty cool. Their language has broad support from veterans, healthcare providers, and most importantly, patients. Right? Like where they should have started consulting with people in Canada instead of ignoring them and winding up with what they've got. Okay. So the New Approach Missouri, and you can find them on Facebook, it says here that they are trying to make Missouri the 31st state to allow doctors to recommend medical cannabis to patients with serious and debilitating illnesses. Amendment 2 is the best initiative for Missouri veterans and patients. Join us. Well, them. I'm not a Missouri veteran, but I'm a patient. But in spirit, join us in voting yes on 2. Amendment 2. We couldn't have done this without your support. Thank you to everyone who has given their time, money, and volunteer efforts to this important issue. Our work is not done. I think we can all say that. Now we need your help in educating the public about our language and getting out the vote. So if you're in Missouri or in the States, maybe a neighbor Missouri down there, and you tell your friends who live there, November 6th, vote yes on Amendment 2. It's a big deal. This thing is creeping across the nation and the planet, and the quicker these repressors realize that, the better it is. So get on out there. And New Approach Missouri, and definitely vote yes on 2 come the election, November 6th. All right, now we're going to do a different number. Okay. Bruce is on the line. He's on the line. And here we go. I'd have to get it. It was a different number. That's what happened. You know, when you're a lawyer, you got to be on the move like that, I guess. Right? Paste that thing in there. Oh, boy. This is getting so hard for me to... My phone is not answering the question here. God. How come I can't put a 1? Got to put a 1 in there, right? It's got to be able to have a 1. It's always at the end of the... This is the worst connection of ever. We had to have one sometime. We had to have the worst connection at some point. I can't seem to get the 1 in front of the 310. I don't know if my fingers are too stupid or what's the deal here. Keeps popping it on at the end there. I can't, you know, I gotta get the 1 in there. Just see if Russell's gonna try to put a 1 in front of the 3. Yeah, see what I mean? Fucking irritating. Oh, boy. Fantastic. And it disappears? What? I hate this stuff, you know. This is why you do a 2-hour show and cut it down to an hour. There it is there. Oh, you gonna put a 1 in there? Okay. We need to put the lines in there. Oh, God. So that was a good commercial, right, for those guys? Okay, so I'll close out the theme for them because they, you know, they got the intro theme. And now we'll say goodbye. Vote yes on that second prop. All right, let's call him, please. Please, can we just connect this time without all the 15 troubles of hell? Let's have it. All right.
Yeah. Mr. Margolin speaking. Can I help you?
Hello, Bruce. This is Alan calling Green Crush. You're live. How are you today?
Beautiful. Nice speaking to you. How's things up in Canada?
Well, we've had a crazy start just like usual with the show, but otherwise things are good. We're on a different political landscape, though, than you are, but I'm still involved in this entire legalization process, and I know you know tons about that that will so apply to not only Canadians, but anybody that speaks English. But you are based in California, and just tell the folks a bit about your start. I mean, I told them already you've been doing this for 50 years, and you've been focusing on cannabis for like the last 20. We've talked about your publication. Tell us how you kind of got into it.
Well, I started my practice in 1967, and I remember one of the first cases I had was a case involving a bunch of kids who got busted in a hippie house here in L.A., you know? Hippie house, sorry about the noise. And at the end of the game, one guy was going to be facing the music, was sentencing. As a young lawyer, I said, you know, Your Honor, I just got out of law school and I understand the purpose of punishment is to punish the intended wrong. What's the intended wrong when it comes to someone involved with marijuana? The older judge looked at me and looked around the courtroom and said, you know, young man, he broke the law. At that point, I realized that I had to do more than fight the courtroom because I wasn't going to get justice there. So I went out, started my practice as director of torch marijuana legalization. I ran for state assembly in 1970 and had a very good showing. I almost lost, beat an undefeated incumbent, 26-year incumbent, and got, you know, it's like 48% of the vote. People realized that this was going to be a, after that, that this legalization platform was legitimate. I ran again several times on the legalization platform, always showing very well in campaigns. I ran for governor, state of California in 2003. I ran again in 2013 for U.S. Congress on the legalization platform again, showing very good results, even though I wasn't a political, you know, savvy. I wasn't well-heeled in the campaign, but it sparked the attention of the candidates and other candidates around the state, and I think helped push the river. I've also been the director of NORML and founder of NORML in Los Angeles since 1973, the National Organization for Marijuana Laws. And so I've been down for the cause for many, many years. As you indicated, I followed this guide for 22 years to try to help people stay out of trouble by realizing what the law is. Because, you know, the best way to stay out of trouble is to know the law and know your rights. And people didn't know the law. And right now you can see how complicated the law remains when it comes to marijuana. It's it's a very difficult situation here in California, like most other states. There's laws, I'm stacked on other laws, and I can explain that to you if you want to hear about it.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that because I really want to get into the specifics of California. Obviously, you're an expert there, and it'll pan out across the country. But given your time doing this and focusing on cannabis issues and the rights, you just see the unreasonableness. I mean, that's at the core of it for you, right? It's just completely unreasonable to jail someone for doing this. I mean, that's the whole bottom end of it.
Obviously, I was shocked as a young lawyer to see young people going to jails along with robbers and rapists. I just couldn't believe it. And, it was the time when there were a lot of young people involved with marijuana. It became, a statement of defiance of authority. And but people went to jail. I mean, my clients did very well for them. I'm famous for many cases. I defended no marijuana cases to any lawyer in the United States, I'm proud to say, and they're very successful. But doesn't mean people didn't go to jail on occasion. And some people went to jail for a long time, especially when they had priors and big cases that were involved, tons of dope. And it was still not right because, again, other than breaking the law, there was no intention to hurt anybody or otherwise.
Right. Yeah.
So the history of the law goes like this, okay? When I started my practice in 1967, any amount of marijuana was a felony, punishment by state prison up to 5 years. And some people got that kind of stuff. For example, Timothy Leary, who was a professor at Harvard, I don't know if you know who he was.
Sure, of course. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, he went to prison for 5 years because the judge didn't like the fact that he thought he was promoting dope deals. And it wasn't fair, it wasn't just. He actually escaped from prison, and I defended him in 1973 for the state charges. But there's an example of how the laws are used as a political weapon against perceived users. We had Richard Nixon, the president, who made it a scapegoat for all his wrongdoings to try to blame marijuana users for the problems of the country.
Right.
Nevertheless, we keep going. So what happened after we had those laws, finally, in about 1976, we were able to pass a Moscone bill. That was the name of the legislator, Moscone. And that reduced marijuana possession to just $100 fine. It's a misdemeanor for less than an ounce, and over an ounce was a misdemeanor, then anything else for possession, sale, selling it, all that. It's really made a felony. And that worked out that it was better, but it still didn't help people that could legally get it. So then we passed Senate Bill 420 in 2005, I believe it was, and that provided for patients to provide for patients on a nonprofit basis, and also provided for collectives so that patients could come together and be able to grow it in a collective environment. And out of that sprung the dispensaries, because you couldn't go to people's houses to start selling weed, so the dispensaries were morphed into the existence, and we had thousands of dispensaries all over the state of California. And those were supposed to be collective that were non-profit, but the law was ambiguous about what profit was, the DA's arguments that they didn't really have a basis to claim, and it went on and on, but there was so much confusion. If you look at my guide, anybody wants to look at my guide on 420laws.com.
420laws.com, yeah.
Yeah. In there you'll see all these cases that are relevant to medical marijuana decisions by the courts of appeal. Cases about describing what is a collective, you know, how much can a patient have, all the cases saying whether or not you could travel with marijuana that wasn't in the statute. You see, the problem is these laws, all the criminal laws, and all laws generally, is that the statutes themselves do not define how it's implicated. And so it takes cases where people get convicted to appeal them to the courts of appeals, and then they come out with their rulings about, under this circumstances, this is how the law applies. Under those circumstances, this is how the law applies.
Wow.
So that goes on and on. One example is, I remember one case in particular that I often bring up, People versus Wayman.
I didn't hear that. What was that? People?
But the name of the case is People versus Wayman, not important. Just the defendant's name, okay?
Sure.
In that case, the defendant was driving around with some marijuana in his car, which he was concealing was medical marijuana. He said he kept it in his car because his mother didn't like it at the house, and therefore he kept his stash in his car.
Right.
And the Court of Appeals ruled you can't store marijuana in your vehicle. You only can transport it for your current medical needs. So that's an example of something. The kid had no idea what to expect. He didn't know that's how the court's going to rule. He told the truth that he had medical marijuana. They conceded it was medical marijuana, but the court had to sustain his conviction because it wasn't being transported for his current medical needs.
Wow.
So these kind of cases are going back and forth and back and forth for years, okay?
Yep.
And people come in my office like deers with headlights on. They didn't know what the hell happened, okay?
Yeah.
And so...
I'm just going to cut in. I want to ask you something specifically on that note, because this walks right up to a question I already had, which is most people, or a lot of people, I guess, don't really know what's going on with the laws in their state or federally or what have you. And they get arrested and they call a lawyer. But by that time, they've already been somewhat processed by the police. They've already been sort of answered a bunch of things. They've already said things maybe they should have said, maybe they shouldn't have. Who knows what, until the lawyer is on board. So I find it fascinating, and I want you to kind of walk us through this. On your guide that's available that we have here, and you can get it from 420 Laws, 420laws.com, or download the app or both, you talk about an invocation of rights wallet-sized card that you have.
Right.
Tell us what that is, what it does, why you should have something like that, and what you're doing wrong when you start, you know, telling them all kinds of things.
First, I tell people you always should be respectful to police, okay? However, what happens is people try to explain themselves to police officers, think that they're going to give a break or they're going to judge the facts. They're not there to judge the facts. They're there to find as much evidence against you as possible. So as soon as you start speaking to a police officer, you start opening the Pandora's box and saying something could be twisted by the cop or something's going to hurt your case. So you do have rights in America to say you have a right not to speak to a police officer while being investigated, and they're supposed to advise you of your rights regarding Miranda versus Arizona, which is the right to remain silent. However, they don't have to advise you of those rights until they both arrest you. So during the course of what's called a detention, they don't have to advise you of rights. And so unless you're arrested, then they have to advise you of your rights before they question you further. So this little card says, you know, I don't want to be detained. I don't want to consent to a search. I don't want to make any statements without a lawyer present. And I don't wish you to discuss my decision in this regard. And I'd like to be released. Now, the cop could take that card and throw it in the trash. On the other hand, he is kind of stumbling because they have a problem here. You can see that right off. So that may save people from getting in trouble if they have that little card in their pocket, okay?
Yeah.
And so That's what people should best understand. They don't need my card. You just have to know the law. The law is you don't have to consent to a search. You don't have to talk to police officers when they start asking you questions unless you unless you do it voluntarily. You can just simply say, officer, I prefer not to be detained. I don't want to make any statements. I don't want to consent to anything. I'd like to go. So if a cop plays the state at all, he's kind of stuck in a situation where he's going to have to come up with some other basis to say to possess the urge for sales or that you were doing something that would make it under the law illegal. That's the story on that.
Yeah. Well, that's a good idea. Most people don't. They've already said something, really self-damning without even realizing it. The longer they spend with the cop before they've got someone on their side.
But I don't know what the law is in Canada. Do you have those kind of rights in Canada?
We have similar rights, but again, I don't know all of our rights up here. I do know they're somewhat different from the states. We don't have the Miranda rights, but you are supposed to be informed of certain things, but I'm not an expert on that. We'll talk to some Canadian lawyers later on. But how has it been the landscape for you as a lawyer in California dealing with cannabis? How has your day-to-day kind of changed between last year and then January 1st, 2018, it was legal for recreational, right? Did that change your game?
Completely different, okay?
Yeah.
2 years ago, I'd have maybe 5 cases a day on my calendar, okay? And the courtrooms were filled with marijuana cases. Half the calendars in the criminal courts were marijuana cases. It was ridiculous, all right?
Yeah.
That's completely gone at the moment. So there's very, very few busts at all in California. They are beginning to pick up a little more now because they're trying to enforce the laws regarding dispensaries and co-ops and things like that, because they want people to get a license so they can make the bucks off of it, because the license, they have to pay taxes. So they're coming around again. And I'm getting calls daily of people that have grows up in Northern California, Southern California. They're getting investigated by the cops. And
We're doing that in Canada, too. That's where we're the same. We're identical on that front, yeah.
Yeah. So you've legalized it in Canada, but they're going after you have licensing there, or what? Is that what's happening?
Well, what's happening? Yeah, there were medical licenses before, and what's going on here is well, I'd like to get if you knew more about it and had the time to look at it, you'd be appalled, I'm sure. But basically what they have here is a system of the medical cannabis access is already in play, and you've already been able to use that. But the main point is that now that the recreational is coming online, it doesn't matter whether you're using it recreationally or if you have it in your system because it's a medical need, your medicine, in other words. What they've got here is the Draeger drug test 5000. I don't know if you know this thing, but this is a test to determine at the side of the road whether or not you are impaired by cannabis. But their definition of impaired is basically that you have it in your system at all.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something. You know, there's a case recently came down in the Court of Appeals. It was a civil case, all right, where the defendant had the accident, he's charged with the baby being sued for having an active criminal negligence. And the prosecutor or the plaintiff wanted to show that the person used or had used marijuana. And the court held that the use of marijuana is irrelevant to whether you're impaired.
Yeah.
The fact that you have THC in your system or the epoxy, which is left over, is relevant to show impairment.
So what
the reality is.
Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
So that court sustained, and that went to the Court of Appeals in that state, and the Court of Appeals sustained the court's view on it, that marijuana in your system is no evidence of impairment in and of itself.
Yeah.
However, what happens when people get stopped with DUI cases is that the cop says, I'd like to ask you to take a few tests here, to walk the line, touch your nose, or stand your head back. All that. That is voluntary. They can't force you to do that in the states of California.
Okay, check this out then. BC, British Columbia, just north of you, north of Oregon. Their system of roads, so that's one of the provinces of the 10 provinces. Everybody's hitting it differently. Everybody's interpreting the federal regulations differently. But if you get pulled over for for that kind of thing in British Columbia. They're not going to test you at the side of the road. This is their plan, apparently, just in BC. They're not going to test you at the side of the road. They're going to assume that you need testing, and they're going to incur all of the difficulties of getting yourself and, I don't know about your vehicle, I really don't know, but getting you down to the police station where you will be detained long enough for them to have what's now known as a drug recognition expert, a.k.a. a different cop at the RCMP station. And he is going to put you through a battery of tests once you've already left the scene of the thing and been transported to the station, etc. Then this guy's going to come in and test. This is for everybody they pull over. I mean,
well, let me tell you something. You cannot be taken from a police station unless they have probable cause to arrest you. And in our state, in our country, they try to show these sorts of body tests of the Achilles heel to people when they take them. Okay?
Yeah.
So they're going to, cops are going to claim that you didn't touch your nose properly. You made an admission that you're using recently. So yeah. I don't know what, in your country, they could take you to jail and hold you and detain you like that. To me, that sounds like an arrest. It's an unlawful arrest.
Yeah.
And in our country, if the evidence comes as a result of an unlawful arrest,
yeah,
then it's inadmissible in court.
Well, the kernel of that I think brings it forth is that I was going to call him a gentleman, but then I'd be misspeaking. The man who put the laws together for Canada under our prime minister, the federal minister who designed our federal architecture, which is ridiculous, by the way, of cannabis proliferation, acceptance, consumerism. The guy that built that is actually, before he was a government minister, he was a long-term police chief for both the province, I think it was the province of Ontario, and also the city of Toronto for a long time. And in 2010... he was enforcing a fake law that wasn't really on the books, but they said it was, to detain people who were outside of the protest area. Like, there's a protest area for the G20 conference, and then there were folks, you know, in that portion of the city who were kettled, you know, and the cops kind of form a block, yeah, a human chain around a major intersection of Queen and Spadina and Toronto. They kettled hundreds of people. Now, some of them, you know, they're people shopping, wandering around with their little puppy and, you know, having a Sunday afternoon or whatever. And they arrested dozens of these people, put them in an artificial, a temporary short-term holding tank, a fenced-in series of pens used in the film industry, and kept people there without water and access to medicine for hours and hours and hours. And these folks have been, this was in 2010, they've subsequently been getting out of their legal troubles of that by suing and winning money. Now, this is because this law wasn't even a law, and this guy said that it was a law when it wasn't a law, and he's never been reprimanded whatsoever, and now he's the architect of some of the most draconian laws around cannabis you've ever seen. So maybe that's why, you know, we're different from you guys. This guy is unchecked, yeah, as a rights abuser already.
Well, nevertheless, let's go back to the California law so people know what's going on.
Sure,
here.
Right on. Let's do that. Okay.
Okay, number two. So, we've had other initiatives on the ballot. I've been fighting for these initiatives for many, many years. Recently, we passed what's called Prop 64. Prop 64 basically came out of Sacramento, which is the capital of California, by the politicians, okay?
Right.
They didn't really talk. They didn't talk to people that were on the ground very much. It's so-called activists. And it was promoted by our lieutenant governor, who's a good guy. But he, of course, they want to compromise everything they're doing on this kind of legislation in order to get their votes. For example, in California, you can't smoke in public, all right? You can't smoke any place unless you have a residence or unless you have a condo or an apartment where the landlords allow you to go and smoke.
Right.
On the premises, okay?
Uh-huh.
So that's one example. Beyond that, they legalized 1 ounce of marijuana, which you could possess, you could transport, and you can give away for no profit. Okay? Beyond that, they reduced all the felonies to misdemeanors. And beyond that, if you've been convicted of a felony in the past, you can bring it back to court and reduce those felonies to misdemeanors to have them expunged. So they try to make amends for the people that got so screwed by the marijuana laws over these many years, the last 100 years. It's been 100 years since 2000, since 1915, when the first arrest took place in California. And since then, hundreds of thousands of people have been prosecuted and incarcerated and destroyed their lives, their families, and their ability to get back to the mainstream of society. They couldn't get jobs. They were completely screwed, all right? So Prop 64 provides that, opportunity to be able to at least correct your record. And then beyond that, we have provided for licensing in all areas of marijuana. Cultivation, manufacturing, even the volatile substances, dispensaries, et cetera, et cetera.
What does one do if you're allowed to have cannabis and then your landlord says, no, you can't consume it here, and no, you can't grow any here? Then what?
Well, that is one of the big problems we're having, and one of the reasons that I've been throwing games with my practice as a criminal lawyer and as a director of Normal, getting the city of Los Angeles to agree to have what's called on-site consumption, because it is allowed under the law, under the state law. However, the state law is defined in a way that says each city and county has the autonomy to decide for themselves to what degree they want to participate in the licensing of these kind of activities. They can't not deny you the right to have an ounce of weed. They can't deny you the right to grow 6 live plants in your residence.
Wow.
However, they can say they don't want to have on-site consumption licenses given out. They can say they don't want to have dispensaries in their community. They don't want to have manufacturing in their community. So each city and county has that right. In the city of Los Angeles, I'm very on game with this situation. I've got many articles about me at the front page of LA Times, et cetera, et cetera, fighting for this on-site consumption license. Because one of the reasons we passed these laws and why everybody's kind of rubbing their hands together in anticipation of making a lot of tax money is because we're going to have a lot of tourists coming to California.
Yeah.
They did Colorado, et cetera.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to explain to them where these tourists are going to go. They've not got no place to smoke. You're just going to force them to violate the law. Admittedly, it's not a serious law, but it's $100 fine for penalty assessment. It's about $500 if they stick to smoking in public. And beyond that, we're going to invite people to California. Go and go shopping for your weed. You don't know what kind of weed you're going to get because you can't smoke it anywhere. And then if you do want to smoke it, you have to do it illegally. So it's really unfair not to have on-site consumption.
Yeah.
And, of course, I'm down for it because I want a few hats in my life. You know, by the way, you mentioned this called recreational marijuana, right?
Well, that's what they call it, yeah.
I know. And I think that's a degrading almost.
Me too.
It's a spiritual substance given to you by the Lord, okay? It's a sacrament, all right?
Yeah.
And so we try to avoid that term and call it adult use, because that's what we have. We have adult use for people 21 and older. We also have use by patients, no matter what age you are. If a doctor recommends it, you could use it. Okay, if you're 5 years old or 50 years old.
Well,
okay?
Plus there's the issue of, like, if I'm using a medical cannabis product of some nature, and then I pass it over to you because you're beside me and we are partaking of this in some area where it's legal. Are you now smoking a recreational joint, or are you smoking a medical joint, or what is it for you? You know, like
first way you can give away up to an ounce.
Okay.
So we're not being, you can give it away for no profit. Okay.
Yeah.
So as long as there's no compensation, then you can give it away. So that'd be no problem. But you would be subject to is a ticket for smoking in public, all right?
Okay.
Or if you live in an apartment, the landlord could throw your butt out, okay? Which is, in some case, something else. Another problem we have is that the law didn't change the rights of employers to fire people or not hire them if they use marijuana.
Yeah, okay, I wanted to get into that. Employment and drug testing. You're working somewhere, and you've got a job someplace, okay? And now you have this condition, or some reason it's your medicine now. And you're not allowed to maybe smoke it at home, and you're not allowed to grow any, and now you got a job where you're not allowed to have any in your system. Maybe they're going to test you. I mean, what do we do about that?
Well, let me talk to you about that. I have two points I want to bring up, okay? These employers these days are using this law in order to fire people who are ready for retirement, okay? You got it?
Mm-hmm.
The guy's been there for 45 years. You're supposed to get a retirement of, you know, $250 a week for the rest of his life. How are we going to fire his ass in a year and a week? It's a very convenient way to avoid the cost of retirement for these big companies. Cal Norman has the legislation right now up in Sacramento that he thinks is going to pass. It provides that California employers can no longer fire you or refuse to hire you if you're using marijuana, okay? So we hope that'll pass, and that's the kind of thing we do in normal. We represent the consumer. We're not saying that dope dealer or anything. We're representing the consumer, trying to protect them any way we can. We provide as much. Hold on.
We'll be right back.
Okay, no problem. I'm not taking it. Don't worry.
Oh, okay.
So Cal, we represent the consumer, and this is an example of the work we do at the normal, the National Organization for Marijuana Laws. We have offices in Washington, D.C. We began that organization in 1972. And as I told you earlier, I founded and the director of Normal in California, Los Angeles Normal since 1973. So we're out there fighting for people.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is, this is all very unfair that they use marijuana as a basis to fire people and not hire them. And it's bad. Now, the federal government also is a problem because they also will not allow people to participate with youth and weed. And if you work for any kind of employer that has federal funding or works for Fed, you're out of the picture here. So unfortunately, we can't control that. Things will change. We have several bills in Congress right now. We have a bipartisan bill in the U.S. Congress to give these states rights. In other words,
states' rights. Oh, here we go. Yep.
It means that the government, federal government, is going to stay in the states where they have decided for themselves how they want to deal with weed. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's get back to testing. Yes, drug testing. Now, I have a little portion of that in my guide about drug testing. It says that there's really no way to clean the system as far as I know. People have products and all sorts of crap. Okay.
Yeah.
The only thing you can do, you can exercise. And you can drink a lot of water, but not too much because you don't want to dilute your urine too much to be suspicious of that. But exercise and drink liquids can be the only way you can help your system. Also, all these stores, Rite Aid, all these different kinds, they have testing kits. So if people are going to face testing, they can check that out. But the important part is we need the public to bring up the inequities of this kind of thing and to argue that the only basis of which someone should be fired is that if they're impaired, small employed, okay?
Yeah.
That they're, you know, if they're impaired, they should have tests for impairment, et cetera. Now, speaking about testing and deciding who's impaired and who's not, in California, the California Prop 64 provides $3 million a year for continued investigation of what causes impairment, whether it be marijuana or some pharmaceutical drugs or whether it's NyQuil or whether it's Advil PM, you know, we should have a standard to establish how it is that someone's impaired or not.
We hear about all these highway collisions and car accidents that go on in our city and in any city, and there's never, you know, if he's a drunk driver, they'll say, oh, a drunk driving incident happened and this is a terrible thing, and it is. But they don't seem to say, this guy was on Xanax, this guy was on, whatever. They don't get into pharmaceuticals. They'll go into drunk driving. Oh, wow. I'm sure they'll go into, this guy was found, you know, with 2 nanograms of 2 nanograms of cannabis in his system. I mean,
that's exactly right. Now, some states have a thing, like I think Utah says, if you have 5 nanograms or more, you are presumptive guilty, just like you have 0.08 alcohol content in the system.
But isn't the nanograms far different from the alcohol readings? I mean, you know, what's a nanogram? That's like nothing.
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything. It's got them telling you that the court have held that the fact that you have THC in your system is irrelevant to whether you're impaired. Because impairment doesn't mean you're under the influence. Being under the influence is not illegal.
Mm-hmm.
It's being impaired. That means unable to operate a motor vehicle safely. That's what impairment is. Okay.
Yeah.
And people on weed are not necessarily, in some cases maybe otherwise. And by the way, I'm talking about otherwise. You've got to be careful using edibles, all right, folks. You better know what you're doing before you take an edible.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
And when you take an edible, you better wait 2 hours at least before you go anywhere so you can evaluate the effect on that edible.
Yeah.
Because what people do, they get these munchies, they get this nice little cookies or whatever they got.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, this one's great. This is delicious. Well, I'm not feeling it. I'll take another one. Next thing they're throwing up on themselves.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I want to make sure people understand that. So this is the kind of thing we've been talking about from the beginning. The duty of the governments are to advise us of the dangers of use and abuse, provide programs of rehabilitation, and continue the scientific evaluation of the effects of using these different kinds of supplements.
Right. Which
they're not going to go away.
No, they put on the back burner forever. They kept saying, well, we can't test it because it's illegal, you know, knowing full well that...
But what's happening now is that the Pandora's box has opened up for the legalization of the United States, and they are finding out such great benefits to the sake of those provides for mankind.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. I get calls every day, people thanking, oh, my God, I can't believe what happened. I had a guy call me yesterday. A lawyer I've known for 50 years, okay? A very good lawyer. He said, Bruce, you know, I've been suffering from Alzheimer's, and I finally thought, you know, I'm going to go down and try marijuana, and I can't believe I would change my whole life just smoking a joint. It's amazing how this guy thought. As a matter of fact, today, I was in court in the LAX courthouse, which is the airport courthouse, and the DA that was on the case, he told me he knew this guy, Nick. And as a matter of fact, he's a very good friend of his. And Nick tells me in the afternoon, a couple of DAs and some judges come up and they're talking about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they all get stoned, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's crazy. But he said it really has affected him in such a positive way, he's overwhelmed with it. And of course, we don't. There's no more anecdotal. We have science to prove that marijuana is very effective.
Absolutely.
People have seizures and kids that are suffering from diseases that no other drugs could help them with.
Yeah.
It's a gift from God. Now, I'm not promoting marijuana. I love it myself. I'm not promoting it.
You don't use it?
I said I love it.
Oh.
But I'm not promoting it. I'm promoting people's choice.
Right.
I'm promoting the choice. People have the choice to decide for themselves how they want to take care of their bodies, okay?
Yeah.
Because we have a constitution that says we have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Sure.
I think marijuana comes in that category for all three of those.
Yeah, that's right. It can extend your life. Extended mine. That's why I'm here talking to you right now. 100%.
Extended your life, yeah.
Yeah, it's supposed to be dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, as a long-term litigator, a lawyer for 50 years, but I'm just going to focus this on your time primarily dealing with cannabis. Have you ever seen or known about a member of the judiciary, such as a judge or a state prosecutor or something, partaking of cannabis while enacting the judicial duties of punishing people for the same thing?
I don't know. I can't say I know of any lawyers. They just got a bench stoned. I can't say that. I've never gone to court ever stoned in my 50 years, okay?
No, not you. I just mean, like, not a court, but do you know, like, someone might, you know, you're not allowed to drink, and meanwhile they got a bottle of scotch in their desk?
Unfortunately, the judges go to lunch and have the afternoon vodka. Who knows what goes on with them? But you asked me whether I knew a judge or a prosecutor. They basically came to court stoned.
No, that's not what I meant. Not that they came to court stoned. I'm just saying I'm trying to pull open a tile on if there's any hypocrisy in a person who partakes of cannabis, you know, recreationally whenever they want to do it. But then when they go to their job, they're busting people or processing people or sentencing people for the same thing that they do sometimes also.
Yeah. Well, look, I don't know who's talking and who's smoking out there, who's all that. I can't get that. But I do know the judges were asking me, hey, Bruce, what's going to happen when they legalize marijuana?
Yeah.
I guess they were referring to my practice. But you know what I tell them?
What?
I'm going to try this stuff, Your Honor. That's what I tell them.
You're going to say what? Sorry, I missed that.
I said the judge would ask me what's going to happen when they legalize marijuana. They were referring to my practice, you know.
Oh, right, right.
And I responded by saying, you know what, Judge, I'm going to try the stuff when they legalize it. And I thought that was funny.
Right. You know? Oh, I see. Right. Making
I never used it before. They thought that was a
Well,
joke,
you should come up here. We have a friend who's
anyway,
you could work up here, I'm sure. You'll be busy.
Anyway, I feel very satisfied about their work. I've really been got a lot of attention. A lot of articles written about me. It's also my guys. Everything from the Associated Press to the L.A. Times. I mean, a lot of people are aware of my work, and I've had a lot of positive feedback. And I'm sure it's closed a lot of doors for me as well, behind the scenes. But ultimately now, I consider some kind of big hero because I was down for the cause so long. Everybody knew about it. They thought I was really nuts, I'm sure, over the years. And now they see the light of day about the reality of how important this was. And number two is, guess what? Dogs aren't having kittens and cats aren't having puppies. Nothing changed because we legalized marijuana.
Right.
And the statistics regarding the number of DUIs and marijuana have not gone up as they claim they're going to do. So all the naysayers and the people warning about the dangers of this drug are all full of crap, and they knew it from the beginning. And we've had enough experience with it over the last 50 years or more to know that marijuana never should have been legalized in the first place. It was a terrible, terrible result of a lot of cost to the government, a lot of cost to the law enforcement resources, and it was a terrible thing that happened to the people.
Absolutely.
That were caught up with. Well, prosecution.
What do you think you aren't able to do now because you're, what are you saying? You've lost some opportunities, perhaps? What kind of things do you mean?
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying, who knows what my doors would open for me if I had been donated an advocate to change the marijuana laws. I don't know anything.
Oh, so you could never become a judge or something, right?
I could be a judge. I could have been a judge. I didn't want to be a judge. I was offered a judge when I first started my practice many years ago. But I didn't want to be a judge. You know why?
Why?
Guess what judges do all day long?
I don't know. Tell me.
What do you think they do?
I don't know. I think they read up on the case a little bit and then, go out there and listen to it.
And then they sentence their asses. That's all they do. Sentence people all day long.
That's all.
And they don't know crap about who they really are. They don't know anything about their backstory. They got a one-page probation report. You've got this conviction, that conviction, this is the crime. This is the time. It's so arbitrary. It's so unjust.
Well, I agree.
Sure. 100%. Unfair. So I didn't want to sit on the bench and start sentencing people all day long. They have no time to really evaluate the relevance of what kind of punishment they deserve or don't deserve. And using this idea that they broke the law when it comes to marijuana as a basis to punish somebody is like a bootstrap argument, you know?
Yeah. That's
so
amazing.
As far as the doors opening and closing, I have no concern about doors opening and closing in my life. I've had a beautiful experience being a lawyer.
Yeah.
I've done plenty of traveling and plenty of teaching my spiritual understanding of the world. And so I'm really proud of my life and what's gone on and stuff. I have four children. All of them are very, very talented. A daughter went to Columbia and Harvard Law School. Another daughter went to Berkeley and Columbia. She's a very well-known writer. If somebody online there listening to us wants to look up this little Madison Margolin, that's M-A-D-I-S-O, she writes articles about all over the world use of marijuana. She writes it for everything from the Village Voice to everything's great to get imagined.
I think that's how it used to be. You know, I think we come from that originally. It was all over the world,
right? Well, she writes about thinking like they're doing it. And Israel with the science of marijuana, she writes about South America, she writes about everything. She hasn't covered much about Canada, I have to tell you, and she probably would like to, so maybe I'll have her interview you or something about an article about
sure.
it. Sure,
yeah, let's...
She enlightens people, you know, with her articles, and she's followed by a lot of leaders, and I'm proud of her. I have a son at UCLA Law School.
Right.
He did very well. He graduated from Berkeley with a 4.0. And I have a 12-year-old, and I'm proud of that, too. So that's my story.
Wow, that's a good story. Great story.
I gotta brag about my kids. What else can I do, you know?
Oh, sure. We all have to do that. Hey, don't you think the cannabis is just like, you said it's a sacrament. It's not a recreational thing. I agree. Don't you also think it's a tool?
It could be all that. It's all the above. I mean, it could be a recreational. People, you know, take a toke and have a party. Okay, that's you know. But you also could use. You could also do have inner things about. You know what? I just came back from Hawaii last about a week and a half ago. I very close to someone named Baba Ram Dass, formerly known as Dr. Richard Alpert from Harvard. You ever heard of Baba Ram Dass?
No, I don't know much about that at all. I just thought you were going to tell me it was burning up in lava.
He was Harvard professor, head of a psychiatric department at Harvard, okay, back in the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
And Timothy Leary is also a professor there, and they began a program of investigating psilocybin and LSD. And as a result of that, they were authorized by Harvard to have an investigative portion of the psychiatric department. And he gave it to people like they were in the religious department to see how they affect their experience with closeness to God, et cetera, et cetera. Ultimately, somebody that was not a graduate student got some acid, and he was thrown out for not watching the back enough, okay? And so he ended up in India and found a guru and changed his name to Baba Ram Dass. He's famous in America. He's got a book called Be Here Now about things we're talking about. So anyway, I was talking about the other day about arguing for the city council about why they should allow the use of marijuana. They should give us on-site consumption locations, like if it's a church or a store, whatever you want to do. I said, yeah, what can I tell about the spiritual use of marijuana? He said, it's a path to God. A path to God. Now, that's one man's opinion, obviously, but many people will tell you that it's a religious experience to them. In India, Sadhus and the saints use marijuana. And matter of fact, even though it's supposed to be illegal because the federal government of California, the United States, imposed their prohibition on all these different countries, they still give the Sadhus, who are the people that are seeking enlightenment, licenses to use marijuana, okay? Notwithstanding the fact that they don't think it's illegal. My point is, it's a spiritual experience for many people.
Absolutely.
And I don't like people ignore that stuff. But this thing called recreational, I think, diminishes the value.
It is. So it's just another bag of tricks, you know? Like when they say, oh, it's harmful for the children. What about the children? And then they go ahead and arrest all these people and ruin their families and their time in school and all of that.
And first of all, children are not smoking weed, okay? It's too far between the two. It's still illegal in California. You've got to be 21 or over. Otherwise, you face the misdemeanors, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, fair enough, sure.
So the only thing you have to concern yourself about is edibles. That if people get them, they get stoned. If kids are not, that would not be good for them. You have to be careful not to make them available. Kids are not going to go rip off some butt off of a plant in the backyard and start smoking it, okay?
Yeah.
First of all, for marijuana to be active, it's got to be heated, okay? And so marijuana off the bud is kind of dangerous to kids because in no way they're going to get stoned on. I don't care if they chew it all day long, okay?
Yeah.
So,
but we've all dealt with alcohol being illegal for most of our, you know, for our entire early lives until we're, what are you guys, 21 down there? So we have 19 here, but 21, so, you know, that's the same thing. Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't see the problem in them being honest enough to say, like, who's falling to these tricks? Like, what about the children? And then they ruin families forever. Hey, I asked you before about your business being, you know, less or different with the legalization in California. I wanted to also ask, so you must have had a bird's eye view, hopefully. When it went legal on January 1st, did you figure there was some kind of a spike in sales at all? Oh, now it's legal and a lot of people tried it, and where did that line go? Because this is something they're always saying is like, as soon as it goes legal, then all the kids are going to try it and, you know, things are going to be madness.
There's no information that's true at all. There's no statistics or other things. I've had nothing come to my attention. And by the way, I still do a lot of criminal practice that I go through every day, but I'm also forced into a business lawyer now because I'm getting people licensing for all the things we're considering illegal before.
Right.
And this is a big part of my practice, to help people get cannabis business licenses. And so instead of going to jail, now they can get licenses and they can go into business and make some serious dollars as a result of it. And the industry is infantile. It's an industry right now. But it's rocking. And these dispensaries are just have people lined up in front of them. And Is it a bad thing? I don't think so, especially if you stop using opiates or stop using alcohol.
Right.
And you didn't know it's a benefit. And so we know that the science of marijuana is not as dangerous to health. There's no evidence of that. Doesn't hurt your lungs. There's no evidence of that. They had all this phony science that the prosecutors and the naysayers wanted to propagate in order to justify the arbitrary view of it. And that's fell apart because the science does not support anything that justifies making it a crime. And sometimes I like to joke about it and think, how could a plant be a crime? That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
A plant comes out of the ground. It's fine. It's crazy, you know?
That's for
and
sure.
And so we've touched about a few things here. I guess we could go off for 2 hours if you listeners were up to it.
We've actually got to get going soon. Unbelievable, because there's so much more to cover, but I want to make sure everybody has your contact information and send them where they can get this great info I was able to read yesterday.
Well, thank you. It's great to kind of you to ask for that. First of all, you go to my website, 420laws.com.
420laws.com.
Or you can call me at my office at 1-800-420-LAWS. Same thing. 420-LAWS or 5297. That's 1-800-420-5297 or 420-LAWS. I'll be glad to answer questions. If you ever want to get into cannabis business licensing field, I'm down for helping them. It's the time to do it. It's a very big opportunity. You got to have some bucks in the business, unfortunately, but it's a great opportunity for people to be able to participate in this area.
We've finally gotten to the place where people can understand how valuable it is and how helpful it is, and of course people that are like you that help us get through the quagmire are on the side of good. So thanks for doing what you do and helping people out with what's basically an imposition of rights. So thanks for helping to fix that.
Well, I want to thank you for the opportunity to be able to speak on the program. I felt honored to be able to spread the news, and I appreciate this, the opportunity to be able to.
Well, thanks very much, and I'm going to take you up on your offer. We're going to have Kim contact the person you were mentioning earlier who also has papers on this. We want to get more information, so thanks for that.
I'm not sure what you're talking about. Who's that?
You mentioned someone earlier in the show, but anyway, we have to get going. We'll get back to you on it, and we'd love to have you back on sometime. And because there are hours and hours of this to talk about, for sure.
Oh, yeah. By the way, if you look at my guide on the line, 420laws.com, it tells a lot of information about it. A lot of it could be helpful to people in Canada if they're trying to politicize this issue. Maybe there's things there that they could do to help promote their freedoms there as well.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Bruce. Bruce Margolin, everybody, thanks very much. Have a great rest of your day, and thanks for coming on Green Crush. We'll talk to you again.
Peace. Bye-bye.
Peace. It's a sacrament. That's a good point. A lot of people don't feel that way about it, but he understands that. Bob Marley understands that. Of course, it's a sacrament. It's something you should be able to use recreationally. He finds that to be an insult. I understand that. People do use it recreationally, though, or that's other. But it's just something that should be okay to use. That doesn't seem to be too outrageous. But hey, before we get going, we do have some announcements to make. All right. So Carrie Lynn is a friend of the show, listens to the show regularly. And Carrie Lynn has won herself the Warren Bobrow book. I think I announced this last week, but I didn't announce maybe that we'd be mailing it out to you shortly. So as soon as we can confirm your address, you get the Warren Bobrow Cannabis and Cocktails book. And we also have another contest ongoing, and it's at Green Crush Pod. That'll get you into it. We have a contest brought to you by Prohibition Cannabis, and it's a great-looking box set that you might be able to win, unless you're a guy that's already won one a couple of months ago. So we'll see who comes in on this one. This is going to be a great Prohibition Cannabis. It's got some really cool accoutrements for your cannabis needs. Also, check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at the Green Crush Pod. We're going to be giving that the last entry is Monday at midnight. So anyway, That is our show for today, episode 50. Thank you very much for listening. And you know what? I'm going to put on some kind of theme song here. Should we do that? Yeah. Okay. This is Alan Park of Green Cross saying goodbye and come back next week.